Gobseck by Honoré Balzac, translated by Ellen Marriage. Section 1. Dedication. Monsieur le Baron Barchou de Penhoen, among all the pupils of the Oration School at Vendôme, we are, I think, the only two who have afterwards met in mid-career of a life of letters. We who were once cultivating philosophy, when by rights we should have been minding our De Viris. When we met, you were engaged upon your noble works on German philosophy, and I upon this study. So neither of us has missed his vocation. And you, when you see your name here, will feel, no doubt, as much pleasure as he who inscribes his work to you. Your old schoolfellow, 1840, de Balzac. Gobseck. It was 1 o'clock in the morning during the winter of 1829-30, but in the Vicomtesse de Grandlieu's salon, two persons stayed on who did not belong to her family circle. A young and good-looking man heard the clock strike and took his leave. When the courtyard echoed with the sound of a departing carriage, the Vicomtesse looked up, saw that no one was present save her brother and a friend of the family finishing their game of piquet, and went across to her daughter. The girl, standing by the chimney-piece, apparently examining a transparent fire-screen, was listening to the sounds from the courtyard in a way that justified certain maternal fears. "Camille," said the Vicomtesse, "if you continue to behave to young Comte de Restaud as you have done this evening, you will oblige me to see no more of him here. Listen, child, and if you have any confidence in my love, let me guide you in life. At 17, one cannot judge of past or future, nor of certain social considerations. I have only one thing to say to you. Monsieur de Restaud has a mother who would waste millions of francs, a woman of no birth, a Mademoiselle Goriot. People talked a good deal about her at one time. She behaved so badly to her own father that she certainly does not deserve to have so good a son. The young Count adores her and maintains her in her position with dutifulness worthy of all praise, and he is extremely good to his brother and sister. But however admirable his behavior may be," the Vicomtesse added with a shrewd expression, "so long as his mother lives, any family would take alarm at the idea of entrusting a daughter's fortune and future to young Restaud. I overheard a word now and again in your talk with Mademoiselle de Grandlieu," cried the friend of the family, "and it made me anxious to put in a word of my own. I have one, Monsieur le Comte," he added, turning to his opponent. "I shall throw you over and go to your niece's assistance." "See what it is to have an attorney's ears," exclaimed the Vicomtesse. "My dear Derville, how could you know what I was saying to Camille in a whisper?" "I knew it from your looks," answered Derville, seating himself in a low chair by the fire. Camille's uncle went to her side, and Madame de Grandlieu took up her position on a hearth-stool between her daughter and Derville. "The time has come for telling a story which should modify your judgment as to Ernest de Restaud's prospects." "A story," cried Camille. "Do begin at once, monsieur." The glance that Derville gave the Vicomtesse told her that this tale was meant for her. The Vicomtesse de Grandlieu, be it said, was one of the greatest ladies in the Faubourg Saint-Germain by reason of her fortune and her ancient name. And though it may seem improbable that a Paris attorney should speak so familiarly to her, or be so much at home in her house, the fact is nevertheless easily explained. When Madame de Grandlieu returned to France with the royal family, she came to Paris, and at first lived entirely on the pension allowed her.